The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network studios.
It's a great Thursday. We still don't have a president. We still have sports, of course. Sports is a great distraction. We have COVID everywhere. This is where we are right now. Like, just when you think you cannot script anything further, I don't think I have a Sharpie in here. There's people that I'm going to give Sharpies to as Christmas presents this year, just because. Who knew that a Sharpie would end up becoming like a talking point? But that's where we are. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business, taking care of our business at Sports 360 AZ. They've been in the Valley for a long, 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 long time. They are conveniently located. They care about community. They are committed to community. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. Here now, Senior Executive Vice President of Nothing or Everything, depending on the day, Eric Sorensen. We will have Devin Henry's going to jump in. Can you stick for Devin? I think the two of us should gang up on him about NASCAR this week. Or not.
Sure. I mean, I don't know anything about it.
Well, that'd be fun. That'd be fun, because I don't either this week. Honestly, I am so checked out on – that's why Devin comes on. I am going to ask one of these interviews, okay, tell me who's in the Final Four. How are they handling the social distancing? Are there going to be any? Is there going to be anybody at the track? And how is the sport holding up here in Phoenix? That's the interview, because that's what people need to know. If you are a gearhead, you are so far down the lane on this one already. So
I'll probably let you handle that one.
All right.
Because I would ask the exact same questions you would.
Yeah, right. Sandy has Michael Fabiano, the Fantasy Focus, and then Ben Utech and his terrific story. That's all straight ahead on today's show. ASU USC. So are you like getting ramped up? I know that we've already gone through the 9 a.m. and the 4:45 and all that stuff, but are you getting to a point of like, it's really going to be cool to see them on the field, or because you wake up today and see that Cal has now had a positive COVID test and their game against Washington is up in the air, are we just holding our breath to even see if they're going to play a game? You saw where Leinart and Reggie Bush and Urban Meyer, all of them, are not going to be there. They all got quarantined. It's just...
I mean, when you have, like, the studio hosts that have to go into quarantine, you know it's bad out there. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm kind of holding my breath as well, because a lot can happen between now and Saturday. But it'll just be good to have the Pac-12 back. I know that they've been the ones that have been kicked down the street quite a bit. Yeah. But it's nice. I looked at the schedule, the college football schedule for this weekend. It's going to be really nice to not have to watch BYU play someone on Saturday night. Like, that's the best part of this Saturday night. They don't have to play UTSA or Navy or any of those other horrible teams that they've been playing all season. I could watch, you know, Clemson against Notre Dame, or I could watch Stanford, Oregon. There are options on a Saturday night. Thank you.
Yeah, like the Clemson-Notre Dame game, even though Trevor Lawrence isn't playing.
I can't wait for it. It's going to be a really good game.
Right. And then I think both of us are interested to see how Tyler Shuck does at Oregon at quarterback. You know, he's going to get an opportunity. The U of A game to me is interesting. I don't know if you saw this, but they let go of 21 employees down in Tucson two days ago.
I did see that. Yep. Yeah.
And I'm not sitting here. I didn't go to ASU. I didn't go to U of A. I don't care. But whenever people lose their job, like today, ESPN laid off 500 people today. 500 people today at ESPN. Gone. Not going to fill positions that are open. There's a saying in the media world, don't piss off the mouse. Well, if the mouse isn't open, the mouse is pissed. So guess what? 500 people, at the worldwide leader in sports, get let go. You're U of A football. All offseason, you've been picked to finish last. You've been picked to not win a game. You've been just stepped on, beat on, unmercifully. You've had guys that have left the program. There's nothing positive that has been out there. And you go to Utah, a team that's always good. They had to lay off their whole athletic department because of COVID. And so are they in disarray? And so you have two teams that, on one hand, I can't imagine Kevin Sumlin getting the troops ready. Hey, man, let's get on the bus and let's get to the airport and let's get up to Salt Lake City. And, you know, there's going to be nobody there at that game for a program that nobody is thinking anything positive about. So you got to believe those players are like, oh. And we don't have to say Khalil Tate's name anymore. I feel like I've been saying that name for 10 years. Like, he's been there forever. So I'm actually kind of interested to see if they show up and if they get boat race 42-0, there's nothing they can do.
It's a great opportunity for U of A, Brad, because they're one of the few teams in the Pac-12 that actually has a returning quarterback that has some sort of experience in Grant Gunnell. It's also big because they're playing Utah in Salt Lake City without fans. Now, and I were in Salt Lake City last year for ASU in Utah, and ASU was completely overmatched, not only on the field, but the crowd had a huge effect. The weather was bad. Yep. U of A probably won't have to deal with any of that. Utah's got a new quarterback. So I don't have huge expectations for U of A, but Kevin Sumlin's seat is probably really, really warm right about now. So he needs to figure out a way to win some games.
But what are they going to do, Eric? They can't let him go, from what I'm hearing around the coaching world. They can't let him go because unless a big cigar alum comes along, it's the Sean Miller thing that's hanging over that entire athletic department.
No doubt.
And so if Kevin goes up there and they get crushed, I mean, what really can you do? And then you're the athletic director and he's in the fight for his life. Dave Hickey's seat is probably warmer than Kevin Sumlin's because of the situation that he's sitting in right now.
And yeah, it's interesting, Brad, because you know you mentioned Utah with all those layoffs, but they're also the same school that extended Kyle Whedonham for another 7 years yesterday. Right. So. Right. Where the money is spent is not a big secret in college athletics.
No, you know, you got to figure it out. But so like Saturday, today's supposed to be the last day in the 90s for the year. If I'm supposed to believe everything, Saturday it might rain. It's supposed to be cloudy and cold and cooler for us. So I can totally see just rolling out and watching ASU USC and rolling right into watching U of A Utah. And that would lead right into watching Notre Dame Clemson, and that would lead right into Stanford and Oregon.
Exactly.
And I would be a toad. I would just be like,
ugh. But that's what we're used to. Like, that's the way it should be. That's normal. Yeah. You know, we haven't had anything normal. These conferences have been coming back staggered. I guess like the MAC had like 6 games last night. It's crazy on a Wednesday. Like, we're just going to open our season on a Wednesday.
Like, I watched a press conference from Aaron Rodgers from yesterday. Packers play the 49ers tonight. The 49ers don't have Garoppolo. They don't have Kittle.
All these players, the list.
Right. And all these Packer players are testing positive.
Right.
And so, like, even Aaron Rodgers is like, yeah, you know, we have to play the game. Yeah, because you're getting a big fat check with a lot of zeros and decimal points. I understand that. But the quality, we're just slugging through the football season. We are just, like Hamilton Desert Vista gets canceled. That was supposed to be the Cox 7 game of the week. And then I get a phone call saying, hey, our announcer is sick. Do you think you could do the game? So I'm going to go do a game. I've not done a high school game in a couple of years, but I'm going to go do Desert Edge against Sunrise Mountain just because I'm kind of crazy sitting around inside and I don't mind being outside. And
that'll be like, fun.
But games are just being shifted and moved and all of the heaviness of the election coming down on people. And I don't know about you, but I go out right now and it just feels very heavy. Toilet paper is gone again. Paper towels are in short supply. It just feels really heavy. And I thought we were through all of it. But
I mean, the only difference between all of those sports is the NFL is going to figure out a way to play these games because Roger Goodell is intent on putting that square peg through that round hole and making sure that they get all those advertising dollars. And if they have to postpone a game, play a game on Tuesday, play a game on a Wednesday, it doesn't matter. He's going to figure out a way to play those games.
Move them to Hawaii and play at 6 a.m. or something.
That's it, right?
All right, Devin Henry's on the other side. We're going to talk Sportive Speed out at Phoenix Raceway. Stay with us. Zoom, zoom. Sportive Speed is in the valley. With everything going on, I think you need to point your attention to Phoenix Raceway. And because of that, Devin Henry, who is the Sport of Speed guru, and I don't use that term loosely with him because he knows all, tells all, like Jordan does with recruiting, Devin does on Sportive Speed. All right. So the race is here this weekend. Why should I care. Why should people care about this weekend's race?
Well, first of all, it's a championship. I mean, it's the equivalent of having the Super Bowl, but obviously for NASCAR, so I don't think it'll reach as big as it would for the Super Bowl or something like that. But this is the Super Bowl of NASCAR, even though it's not Daytona. It's the actual physical championship. And the way that NASCAR hands this out is it's a one-year contract, and then they renew it every single year. So if Arizona steps up and goes, hey, we want this year for the next 10 years, like Homestead Miami Speedway had it for 19, you know, if the market gets into it, this could be an annual national championship held here in Phoenix. It's guaranteed for next year, but that's it. So at least we will have a hopefully non-COVID championship next year. But right. Hey, if the city gets into it, there's a chance that we have a Super Bowl and a NASCAR championship the same year. Final Four NASCAR championship in the same year, so on and so forth. So just another championship event, not just in Arizona, but in particular, the West Valley.
No, and I'm big on that. You know, it is about community. The W's and the L's and who finishes first, all that stuff, that's fine. It's about all these people that say, we're going to leave our tax dollars here in hotels and bed taxes and bars and food and all that stuff, at least from my point of view. But on the track, fill me in about this weekend and what does it look like for this weekend?
Well, first of all, crowning four champions in 3 days. So NASCAR has these different lower series. We call it the minor leagues. It's kind of the equivalent. So there's like a AAA group and a AA group. Obviously, NASCAR has all its caveats, and so it's a little bit different here and there. But four champions. So, I mean, you essentially have the college championship, the single-A championship, the AAA championship, and the big league championship over the course of 3 days. And one thing talking to some of the drivers in the minor leagues that we've been able to talk to so far is they talk about aggression. At Phoenix Raceway, they have that dog leg on the front straightaway where on restarts, they will dive bomb that dog leg. They'll rub fenders going into turn one about 160 miles per hour. It's already aggressive enough. Then in the lower series where you have these kids, teenagers, 19-year-olds, 21-year-olds, 23-year-olds, and they beat and bang, in this case on Friday night, those little pickup trucks. Mm-hmm. And so one of the major issues the past few weeks has been over-aggression. And I think we'll see a little bit more over-aggression over the course of the weekend just because of how Phoenix Raceway is formatted out.
You're smiling about this. Like, you like this aggression.
I mean,
who doesn't? Who doesn't, right?
Yeah, exactly. It depends. Right. If you're a purist, you don't like people taking each other out. But, for instance, the truck series is one of those series that beating and banging is a part of the game. Short track racing is all about the chrome horn. You don't like to see people just dump another guy, but you know, good side-by-side racing, a little bit of pushing, a little bit of shoving. It's fun, and it makes it exciting.
This is Jimmy Johnson's last race, okay, so in Phoenix. And Jimmy Johnson, I can go all the way back to him in El Cajon when I was in San Diego. He's been racing a dang long time. They're naming a street after him for this weekend. Nice PR move on that part. Is there anything around Jimmy Johnson that's of interest to you as he's coming to Phoenix for the last time?
Well, I will say this. Back when Phoenix Raceway unveiled their $178 million in renovations and they've kind of put out the schemes and stuff, one of the artist renderings was of the interactive victory lane. What car was in that victory lane? Jimmy Johnson's 48. So if superstition proves right, Jimmy Johnson wins this weekend. if the past couple of years of results prove right, then he's probably just going to have like a top 15 day. Yeah. But nonetheless, you know, Jimmy's won here a couple of times. He has those seven championships. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. If they even want to throw him on the ballot, he's just going to get in there. And what he has done behind the scenes, typically when you get a champion like Patrick Mahomes, for instance, mm-hmm. you know, he's everywhere. He's plastered everywhere. He has some big talk every now and again. Jimmy Johnson, pretty low key, pretty yep. even headed. You won't hear him talking smack. You won't hear him playing mind games. He's just a guy who goes out there, gets it done. The utmost respect for everyone on the track, all the media members, all the fans. Everyone. And the biggest disappointment is I shot a video in March after qualifying and pulls into the garage. Maybe 100 people sitting right there in front of the garage to greet him after qualifying. What the impact that Jimmy Johnson has had in the NASCAR community in transforming the world of NASCAR over the past few years. Maybe you go back to Richard Petty. It's definitely in comparison to Dale Earnhardt. Unfortunately, his career got cut short, but I mean, what he has done to change the world of NASCAR on track, off track. It's going to suck seeing him go to IndyCar and trying his hand at that. But I know that he'll have an impact there as well.
Devin Henry's with us, Sport of Speed, on the site, sports360az.com. Devin knows all, tells all on that front. Fans coming, not coming, this, who's allowed in, who's not allowed in?
So 8,000 fans per day. This includes Friday's Truck Series race, Saturday has two races, and then Sunday's Big Cup race. And I know that there's a lot of fans not happy about this. Phoenix Raceway does not set the numbers. It's all set by local government. That's how they've been doing it since May. You can have it worse. You could be in Las Vegas in the week of the race. The leadership there says, oh, you know what? Nah, no one's going to go. So at least Phoenix Raceway has 8,000 people every single day. And I talked to Julie Gies. He did an interview with her, and you can go check that out on the site as well. And the way that she described it is, first thing we did is we said season ticket holders, which is those who have both March and fall tickets every single year, went by seniority. It sounded like they got all of them in that 8,000. And then after that, it was who had November tickets the longest after that. And so it was a seniority tiered system. Unfortunately, not everyone got to go in. And probably the biggest problem that fans had was that there was no refund. It's a credit for next year. You know, on one hand, you finally get to go to a championship if you didn't get to go this year. On the other hand, that money's gone. So controversy on both ends, but you know, we're in a pandemic. Not everyone's going to be happy about it. And, you know, hopefully we just look forward to next year and be able to have all 42,000 seats filled.
Last question. So we're down to the final four, right? So what what does that look like on Sunday from your view?
So you've had plenty of kids, Brad. You remember Disney Pixar's Cars? Yes. Remember that movie?
That's four kids. That is plenty. It's more than plenty.
But everyone's seen that movie back in 06, right? Cars and the final little race is the three of them. They're all tied in points. Whoever finishes the best wins the championship. Yeah. It's the same thing. These four drivers are tied, and whoever finishes the best, points don't matter. Stages, none of the gimmicks matter anymore. Four drivers race. Whoever finishes the best wins the championship. Okay. The only difference is that there's 36 other drivers, some of which still looking for a ride for next year, some of which, like Clint Boyer and Jimmy Johnson, looking to define the end of their legacy, that want to win that race. And it's like that in three of the major series. So whichever the four finish best, they're champions. But they still have to compete with the other 36, along with those other three, to try to win that title. And that's what kind of makes it exciting. As a purist, not a huge fan of the playoff system, but boy, it makes this championship extremely exciting.
Yeah, no, I can hear it in your voice. Good stuff there. Enjoy the weekend. We'll be watching your content. Thanks.
Oh, I will enjoy it. Thanks, Brad.
There's Devin Henry with us, Sport of Speed. You can check him out on sports360az.com. He, when I first met Devin, we were talking about, hey, so what are your interests? And like, this is what you just saw? That's him. He eats, breathes, sleeps. It's good stuff. We're back with more. Sandy Charles on the other side with Michael Fabiano after this timeout.
Hey, everyone. Welcome on in. I'm Sandy Charles. And as always, I'm joined by Sports Illustrated's senior fantasy analyst, Michael Fabiano. Michael, we're going to start in the Bay. So many injuries this year, just constantly plagued. And now with 49ers quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo out, how does this affect their wide receivers, Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk?
Right. Well, so Deebo's still banged up, and we've got a short week for the Niners. So I would expect Ayuk to be the guy, but as much as I loved him last week, this is a bad map. Jair Alexander is a bad man. That guy is one of the top cover corners in the National Football League, and I can't see a scenario where he's covering anybody but Ayuk this week. So I would downgrade him. He is a flex at best. The matchup is just not good. And like Nick Mullins came in and played well last week. He was way better than Garoppolo from a fantasy perspective, although it was garbage time points. But Nick Mullins is also a guy who was benched for C.J. Beathard not too long ago. So I wouldn't get too excited about Mullins this week. The bigger issue in that game is the running backs on both teams, including the Packers, right? So we're not sure if Aaron Jones is playing. Jamal Williams is not going to play because of COVID. He was in close contact to A.J. Dillon, who tested positive, and he's out too, which means you could be looking at Tyler Irvin and Dexter Williams in Green Bay's backfield. Both players should be added off the waiver wire. And for the Niners, you've got three guys hurt. Tevin Coleman came back, got hurt again. And so it could be Jerick McKinnon and Jamichael Hasty, who we mentioned last week as a potential pickup off the wire. So a mess. Injuries and COVID are wreaking havoc on our fantasy football rosters.
And another injury, George Kittle, tight end for 49ers.
He's also out.
So who do you replace with him?
There's no replacing him. So really, if you're looking at just the Niners, now Jordan Reed was designated to turn off injured reserve, but they haven't said that he's going to be back or not. So right now it's Ross Dwelly, but it could be Jordan Reed. But we may as well get into the tight end ads as we're looking for replacements for George Kittle. Trey Burton's in the mix. He doesn't have a good matchup this week, but he's getting targets. Logan Thomas is a good option. Robert Tonyan might have been dropped in some leagues. On ESPN, he's about 50% available, and he's playing the Niners. And then Eric Ebron is also about 50% available on ESPN as well. And he's got my beloved but awful Dallas Cowboys. So those are a few options that you can potentially go out and get off the wire. But replacing George Kittle is not going to be easy. In fact, it is impossible.
Now let's touch on your Cowboys just a little. Is there just anything salvageable with their offense?
It stinks. It's a nightmare. Amari Cooper was my sit of the week at wide receiver, and he had 1 point. I didn't think he'd be that bad, right? And I don't want to ruin the surprise here, but this week's running back edition of Stardom and Sit 'em is unlike any I can remember. It's because there's a lot of big names that you might have otherwise been thinking are must starts who aren't necessarily must starts at this point. So I'm not picking up Andy Dalton. I'm not starting CeeDee Lamb. I actually don't hate Cooper this week against Pittsburgh with Dalton back. Zeke, he's been awful since Dak got hurt. He's been awful. And Pittsburgh's defense is really good against the run, even though Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins ran all over him last week. There's not a lot to like. There's not. Dalton Schultz had a pretty good game last week. I don't like him either this week. It stinks, and it's amazing how quickly players' values can change when one guy goes out. Mm-hmm. The second Dak Prescott went out, everybody's value went down the toilet. Everybody in Big D. And hopefully that teaches the Cowboys and Jerry Jones a lesson, and they get this dude paid because the offense has been dreadful. This was one of the top five offenses in the National Football League with Dak. Now it can't get out of its own way. It's been pathetic.
Last week, your offense or players to run from was all the Patriots. Would you say now it's all the Cowboys, or you're still just iffy?
No, I mean, you're probably going to be forced to play Zeke. I mean, he was a top three pick.
Yeah.
A Cooper, people probably had to play him last week. Probably got to play him. CeeDee Lamb, probably got to play him, right? Some people have to play Dalton Schultz because the tight end position is thin. But much like the Patriots, there's no sure bet anymore on that roster. I mean, with New England, like Cam actually wasn't bad last week from a fantasy perspective because he was able to run the football pretty well. And, you know, Julian Edelman's out. Jacoby Myers, not the law firm, the actual player. Do they have Jacoby and Myers commercials out where you are? Because, like, that's the big running joke. So he actually is worth an ad off the wire. I don't know that I trust him as a weekly starter. In fact, I don't. But Damian Harris was pretty good last week.
Yeah.
And I think the bugaboo about Harris was that if the Patriots got game scripted out of running the football, that Harris would have no value. The Patriots actually stuck with Buffalo last week. A lot of people didn't expect that, and Harris was able to find success. And they've got the Jets coming up, and Jets stink. Like, if there's a team that stinks worse than the Cowboys, it's the Jets. So Harris should be added off the wire as well. But there's not much else to like in New England.
Now, with the Panthers running back, Christian McCaffrey reported, supposedly coming back, how do you see it playing out between him and Mike Davis?
McCaffrey is going to get that full workload again. Like, Mike Davis was good and all. The last couple games, not as much, right? Mm-hmm. McCaffrey's just on another level, and I would expect that Mike Davis will probably end up getting dropped in a lot of leagues. I don't think there's enough of a role for him to sustain standalone flex value.
Now, waiver wires, I know we touched on a little bit. Let's break it down just a little more. Let's start with quarterback waiver wire needs.
It's ugly. It's horrible. It's much like the Cowboys defense. Phillip Rivers has been good in his last two games. but he's got the Ravens this week, okay? Derek Carr, I actually like this week against the Chargers. You can add him. Nick Mullins, we talked about. Drew Lock is a nice sleeper. Looked pretty good in the second half against the Chargers last week. He's got Atlanta this week. And then if you're in a deep league, 2QB league, super flex league, Jake Luton. It looks like he's going to be the starter for the Jaguars. And it might get ugly there. Who knows? But that is how bad we are at the quarterback position right now. So 2QB super flex leagues, you can go ahead and add Jake Luton. Yep, that's where we're at in Jacksonville.
Okay, let's move to wide receiver. We broke it down a little, but a little more in depth, wide receiver needs.
So Curtis Samuel's had two good games in a row. You can add him. They've got Kansas City this week. Mike Williams, two of his last three games have been huge, and Justin Herbert's a beast. Corey Davis, although I don't love the matchup, he is worth a roster spot across the board. So is Marvin Jones and Marvin Hall as well, with Kenny Galladay out for – I guess an indefinite period of time, which stinks because I have a lot of shares of Kenny G. Unfortunately, I mentioned Jacoby Myers. Alan Lazard could be coming back soon for the Packers. Nicole Hardman, Anthony Miller, Braxton Berrios. Randall Cobb is also a nice add coming off of Houston's bye week. And then with T.Y. Hilton hurt, you got Zach the Rascal Pascal and Marcus Johnson, although neither player is a great option against Baltimore this week.
A running back position, especially like you mentioned earlier, with all the COVID protocols and Packers, what they're dealing with their backfield and COVID, the running back waiver wire situation, what does it look like?
There's actually some good ones, believe it or not. Zach Moss is the best running back in Buffalo. I think we all kind of saw that coming, and then he got hurt. He was very good. He's getting more red zone opportunities than Singletary as well. Gus the Bus and J.K. Dobbins should both be owned, but again, matchup not great this week. I'd start Dobbins over Edwards this week. DJ Dallas in Seattle, his numbers were awful in terms of efficiency. He had like 23 touches and 58 yards. It's terrible, but he had two touchdowns. And so if Chris Carson can't go and Carlos Hyde is out and Travis Homer is limited again against Buffalo, well, then DJ Dallas is going to be worth a look. I talked about Jamichael Hasty, Damian Harris, Jordan Wilkins, and Naheem Hines, Jonathan Taylor. What the heck, man? I mean, goodness gracious. I thought he was going to be a top 10 back last week. Nope, it was Jordan Wilkins. And Taylor's dealing with a little bit of an ankle right now. So both of those players are worth adding. Phillip Lindsay's probably owned. If he's not, you can go and get him. Brian Hill, Wayne Gallman, Cam Akers, although the Rams are on a bye. It looks like Darrell Henderson's going to be okay too. So Akers is more of a deep league guy. And then with the Packers, Tyler Irvin and Dexter Jackson, because we're not sure what's going on there in Green Bay's backfield. I don't know who'd start. Like, Jackson is actually coming off the practice squad. Irvin was on the big roster. So maybe Irvin will start and Jackson will get mixed in. I can't really tell you. Both players need to be added, though, in fantasy leagues.
Any last waiver wire needs?
Well, I would say this. There are some really good matchups that fantasy owners when you are hurting at running back, you've got injuries, whatever the case may be, maybe wide receivers. A good way to pick up some points is to keep tabs on those defensive matchups, right? So the Patriots defense could have been dropped in some leagues. They've got the Jets this week. The Jets stink. The Cardinals defense is a good play this week. They could be on the waiver wire in some leagues. The Washington football team, their defense is playing the Giants this week. That could be another nice option. The Texans, right? Jake Luton. Again, I don't know. I mean, whatever. It is what it is. He's going to be the quarterback. He's never started a game in the NFL. So, like, the Texans are also worth a look off the wire. Just keep in mind that you have more than just running back, wide receiver, quarterback, and tight end on your team. You can make up points playing a very good defensive matchup. I mean, the same thing goes for kickers as well, but more to the point defenses. So if any of those defenses are out there on the wire, go out and pick them up. Points is points. And a lot of people out there need those points, especially with all of the injuries and the bye weeks and COVID. It's been fun, Sandy, hasn't it? Fantasy football, it's been quite challenging this year.
It has been a challenge. One thing on this weekend, Cardinals were off, and I was pretty sad. I missed them, but they're back. And so you just touched on them just a little bit. Chase Edmonds now. How successful do you see him being this weekend?
Yeah, I love the matchup. The matchup's really good against Miami. Like, this is one of those plays that scares me because everyone is going to love him this week. Yeah. And sometimes when that happens, it goes sideways. But Miami's defense is not good against running backs. and Edmonds was better than Drake when he got an opportunity earlier this season. So right now we hate the Drake, although, you know, he's hurt, whatever. But we love Edmonds. Yep. And Edmonds is a must start this week.
And he could Wally Pip Kenyon Drake, which would
– I think he should at some point. Yeah, I mean, he's been so good.
He has been really good. Last thoughts for fantasy owners, what are they?
Don't get too frustrated. It's been rough, man. I mean, like, last week we didn't know what Seahawks running back was going to even be active. I have two rosters where I have, like, three running backs from Seattle, and I obviously only started one of them. But, man, it's more important than ever to – pick up backup running backs, you know, if you've got a dead spot on your roster. Like, you never know when one of those guys could pan out. And don't get frustrated. And if your team stinks right now, maybe you only have two or three wins, keep playing. Like, don't give up. I hate that. I hate when people who are out of the playoff race, or at least they think they're out of the playoff race, just quit. And then that hurts the rest of the league. So keep fighting. Keep playing. Try to get to 500. Who knows? Maybe you'll reach the playoffs. And try not to get frustrated. I do this for a living, and it frustrates the hell out of me. Let me get frustrated with everything. And you guys, read the information, make an educated guess, set your lineup, and that's all you can do at this point.
As always, Michael, great information. I'm Sandy Charles. He is Michael Fabiano, senior fantasy analyst for Sports Illustrated. We'll see you next week, same time.
All right, take care.
Let's turn our attention for a couple of minutes, as we are apt to do from time to time. I like to talk about the inspiration side of football and also the concussion side of it as well. You can never just put this off to the side and pretend that it's all gone away and everything is hunky-dory, because it's not. It's always there. Ben Utek is with us, former Indianapolis Colts, Cincinnati Bengal, tight end in the league. He is out of the league, but he is in a big way helping out because his love of the game continues, as his love for his family. There's a book that you guys should pick up. It's called Counting the Days While My Mind Slips Away, a love letter to my family that Ben has put together. He has BenUtekSpeaks.com. He has done TED Talks. He's very passionate on this subject. I just wanted to have him on for a few minutes to catch up on how are you, why this, the whole thing in post-NFL life. For many guys, Ben, I'll talk with them, and I feel like they're lost souls, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
You found your passion. Let's start with where you're at today in the book.
Well, man, the book was an interesting journey, because I didn't expect it. You know, like you said, transitioning out of the NFL for many is a challenge. You know, I was blessed to grow up in a family that really taught me more about my identity, and I knew where I wanted to go. I had no idea, though, that that I would be pulled into this philanthropic world for athlete brain health. And really, the book came about to be a voice of vulnerability. I think, you know, for players, that's really tough, especially, as you know, Brad, for athletes that are currently playing. I mean, to talk about these things openly is is difficult. At best. And so the book gave me a chance to just to be a vulnerable voice, to talk about the things that scare me the most about the future, hence the title of the book, and some of the memory issues that I was having, which led me to retire early. But it's been, you know, it's been a rewarding philanthropic pathway for me to really help people that are going through a lot of difficult times.
How many concussions do you think you had?
Well, there were five documented concussions. Sure. And, you know, obviously getting your bell rung, seeing stars. So you go back and you do your best to count. And I've never really been able to put a number to it like some other players have. But it was definitely more than five. I mean, there were probably a few to a handful in the NFL that I knew were concussions. But kept my mouth shut, because you know you want to be there for your teammates, and you want to be there for your coaches and for the organization.
Yeah, the documentation side is always one, Ben, I found, where players, when you peel the onion back when they're done playing, they'll say, I had dozens and dozens. I just didn't want to say anything, or it may not have been, or it was the term, the bell rung, and so on. And this is not bashing on football. This is not an attack on football. On your part, this is just, guys, here's what I went through.
And I want to inspire you to keep playing the game. Am I going down the right path on this?
Yeah, I've always been very clear that I have a pro brain, pro game message. That's why the NFL Players Association had me speak to Congress. You know, I've been a voice of vulnerability, but one who is in parallel, always trying to elevate the game, because the game of football provided life lessons for me and relationships that are priceless. And I wouldn't be who I am today if it wasn't for the National Football League. And so I think the best way to get done what we want to for athlete health and wellness is to do both, to be advocates for player safety and health, but also to talk about all of the incredible fruit that comes out of playing this wonderful game.
When did you first think, hey, something's not right? What was the warning sign?
Yeah, so I write about, to the best of my ability, write about the concussions that I faced. The fourth concussion that I faced in Indianapolis resulted in a diagnosis of amnesia. And that was eerie because as I went into the facility the next day, I remember going in to watch the injury happen on film. And so I see my body go unconscious and limp on the turf. I'm probably unconscious for 10 to 15 seconds. Players surround me. And then all of a sudden I regain consciousness and I hop up on my feet. I'm high-fiving everybody and I'm sprinting off to the sidelines where I'm talking to my coaches. And you know, Brad, I have no recollection of any of that. The rest of that day is completely gone. And so that was the first time that I ever actually realized that moments from my life were removed, like erasing a blackboard. And even though I'm watching myself function completely, there's just nothing there. And after that concussion is when my wife and I started noticing some cognitive changes in my working memory, short and long term functioning. And but again, I was having a great season and went on to sign a great deal with Cincinnati. So you kind of just check it off as being a part of the game. And, you know, so that's kind of where we were at that point.
And today, Ben, if you want to peel the onion way back, and if you don't, I get it. But are there things today where it's, I don't remember what I did yesterday or a week? I run into former NFL players that say they've got to put their address in their pocket because they don't remember where they live. And there's others that I will not put on the air because I just simply don't want to embarrass them. And these are well-known name players, and I'm not going to throw them out here. But are you in that space yet?
No, and honestly, it really became the miracle of the book. You know, the book kind of has this ominous title, but the story in and of itself is pretty miraculous. As I was writing with my co-writer, I was also in a very intensive brain training program that was built by a company called Learning RX. And I was in a 3-month, 100-hour, very intensive program. I spent an hour and a half a day, Monday through Thursday, brain training with a physical trainer sitting across the table from me. Wow. And it completely brought me out of this concussion fog that I was in, Brad. I mean, if you saw my pre and post neuropsych evaluation, you wouldn't believe it. And I've had so many people say, gosh, you know, we read your book, we expected to talk with you that you were going to have problems. But I'm probably stronger cognitively now than I've ever been. And it's because I took the initiative to strengthen my cognitive weaknesses caused, I believe, from years of just head-on-head trauma. And so currently I'm in a really good place, and it's a part of my message, especially to players, is to seek these types of treatments because they are there.
Counting the days while my mind slips away, a love letter to my family with Ben Utek. Ben Utek speaks.com if you want to get more information on Ben and what it's all about. So do you do things on a daily basis to work your brain?
Yes. So after spending the last, you know, 6-7 years in the world of neurology, I've had a chance to be surrounded by some of the best neurological minds in the world and just learn more about the brain and especially neural pathways and the neural pathways that we create that provide the channels for us to have information, Brad, they don't atrophy like a muscle. Mm-hmm. So it's a much slower process than if you were to stop working out and what you would see in your physical body. And so I've been able to really go on a maintenance program where I can check in monthly and really keep the level of cognition where it needs to be. And that's something that I'm going to do annually every year because, you know, if I'm one of those players that does have a diagnosis in the future, which I pray I don't, but if I do, I want to do whatever I can now to build as strong of neural pathways and cognition that I can mm-hmm. to fight those days ahead.
You talk about the value that exists in the meaning of the moment. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, when you start realizing what it's like to not remember, you begin to look at your life differently and you begin to understand what really makes you relevant in this world, what makes you matter. And the only thing that really I could come to the conclusion that makes you relevant is what you can remember. It's your memories. And that was kind of a fork in the road for me because I had a choice to make. Am I going to allow myself to wallow in self-pity and depression and fear, or do I take this new belief, ideology that memory really makes me who I am, and do I use that to improve myself as a husband and as a father, as a business leader, because every single moment is a memory that creates my significance as a human being. And it's just made me live every moment to the fullest. And I don't do it perfectly. Just ask my wife and four daughters, but I try to the best of my ability because, you know, as you know, you've already mentioned this, you listen to the stories that some of these players are going through and you realize, oh my gosh, you know, as those memories fade, you know, that's really the identity of a human being. And so that's really, I think, the focus of my MVP message.
When you do a TED Talk, what's your message when you're on stage? Because a lot of business people watch what we do, and it's a different lens than just catch football, run to the end zone and locker room and all that. When you're doing TED Talks, what's that like?
Well, that was an incredible experience. You know, my primary speaking topic, Brad, to the Fortune 5 is really leadership development and culture development through the lens of servant leadership and what I learned being on a Super Bowl championship team with Tony Dungy. But when I got asked to do the TED Talk, it was really focusing more on my identity as a man through the struggle of concussion. And that topic really revolves around what does it mean to be an MVP, not only in sports, but in life, right? Mm-hmm. And that is that memory, value, and purpose, right? The more we realize that our memories are what make us who we are, the more we value every one of those moments in our lives and the more purpose we have than every day. And that's also a lesson for us as not only as humans and family members, friends, but also as business leaders, because purpose really drives performance.
You sang the national anthem last year. And, you know, when I saw that clip, I'm like, that, for lack of a better term, that's a badass moment, Ben, because here's someone that has had brain trauma. Here's someone that decides I'm going to walk out in front of 60,000. And yes, it was in Indianapolis. And yes, they love you there. But still, to belt out the anthem, where you've been and where you are and where you're going,
How did that come about? And what was that like just from a self-confidence? Hey, man, I can go out in front of – I can go do TED Talks. I can go sing the anthem. This whole brain trauma thing, I got it.
Yeah. Well, it's always fun to break stereotypes. And listen, I mean, you've got – you've had Terry Bradshaw has put out an album, as you remember. Yeah. And so, you know, there's always this stereotype, right? Oh, another singing athlete. But for me, it's been an equal passion to sports. I grew up vocally trained. My dad was a vocal music major. And so I grew up with training, and I began performing professionally in college. And so the funny story, the ironic story is that when I went to Indianapolis as a rookie, I got brought on by the team with a pretty serious injury. So I actually had to sit out the first year. But for the very first preseason football game, Bill Polian agreed to have me sing the national anthem. So the Indianapolis sports market saw me first as a singer and not actually as a tight end.
That's great.
So that was, yeah. No, but what a special song. You know, you always hear singers say that it's the most difficult song to sing. For me, it's the easiest song to sing. I love it. I think that, you know, the patriotism behind it is truly powerful. And, you know, especially when you're in front of 60,000-70,000 people, it's hard to put into words what it feels like.
Last question, I'll get you out of here. And that is,
no problem.
Have you given thought to where am I going now? What am I going to look like when I'm 50, 60, 70?
Man, you know, that, Brad, I think that is the question. I think that's the question for most players, because it's directly connected to identity. And I'd be lying to you if I haven't gone through somewhat of an identity crisis of my own as I've tried to figure out what is next. And you know, your whole life is a sport. And then all of a sudden, in a moment, it's gone. And you really have to land on a foundation that gives you true meaning. And so for me, on the personal side, it's like I said, it's waking up every day and realizing how blessed I am to have my wife and to have my four daughters and to understand the role that I play in their lives as a husband and a father. And then really as a man of faith, I'm constantly trying to seek out opportunities to serve. Mm. And I'm hoping that, that the doors continue to open for me to do that in business. I think one of the things that I've really enjoyed is taking this belief system that Tony Dungy created in Indianapolis and bringing that into the corporate marketplace, because you're going to have a culture by design or default. So why not design it? Why not choose it and allow it to be something that that supports the health and well-being of your entire corporate team and allows them to succeed? And that, so I'm hoping that that's kind of where my path continues to go. And I don't have a football player in the house, so I'm kind of surrounded by girls that love volleyball and tennis and golf. And so
nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. It's awesome.
Good for you. I really appreciate the time and the insight. The name of the book is Counting the Days While My Mind Slips Away, A Love Letter to My Family. Ben Utech. Go to benutechspeaks.com. Thanks for the time.
Thanks, Brad.